Welcome, everybody, to the Stoke It Up podcast, a podcast encouraging you in your journey with God. I'm Alan Stoddard, and I am your host, and we are jumping back into part two of an interview that I did with Dr. Kenneth Priest on church revitalization. And this impacts so many things. We've got to have pastors and people on board because we need to be great commission churches in these days, and we want to fan into flame the gift of God that is in you. And so I hope that you'll tune in. I'll meet you on the other side. Let's jump in and check out the last two questions of revitalization. Well, all right, everybody, we are back for part two with Dr. Kenneth Priest, my bro, my best friend in the ministry, a man who loves all people. I always tell Kenneth, I've been riding your coattails for many years. Kenneth has got me into some rooms at places with people, and God has blessed me so much with that. Kenneth is such a blessing. He and his sweetie Debbie are in Hawaii, if you didn't pick that up. They are serving as the interim pastor of Isle Valley Church. Valley Isle Church in Hawaii. That is so awesome. You could be doing so many things, and you're helping the church transition and find a new pastor and get them healthy and all of that. So this is part two. Welcome back to the podcast, Kenneth.
Oh, glad to be back and excited about the conversation for today.
Yeah, I was sitting around last week and I was thinking, okay, we need to crank up something to begin and go. I started thinking, I wonder what Kenneth would say are the top things that they have to be in place. These are not things you're working toward. You can work toward them, but if we were going to say this church is revitalized and or is healthy and it's and it wants to stay there, what are some of the things? Now, there are more things, so let us throw that out. And if you want to share those in the review or comments and give us suggestions, you can. But let me give you a review of what we said last time. We said that these are the non-negotiables, seven non-negotiables, a culture of prayer. And if you have not listened to the first episode, go back and listen to that. A culture of prayer in a church is crucial. Number two, expectancy of God to move. I really like that one. We expect when we preach the gospel, teach the word of God, and pray and have the wind of God in the sails of the church, there's an expectancy that I would throw in. People are going to be saved. They're going to be baptized. There's going to be things happening. Worship, number three, geared for evangelism. We explored that. Number four, a follow-up strategy for all church activities, worship, and events. So follow-up to people is crucial. And then we talked about community outreach. What are the events that a church can do? Fairly simply, we gave some ideas. I think this is called servant evangelism, maybe in the community. And what we did not get to that I want us to explore today are the last two questions of what it looks like for a church to really be revitalized and spiritually healthy. And it would be these two. Number six is the congregation is equipped for evangelism. Oh my gosh, I'm excited about that one. And then number seven is the congregation is equipped for New Testament disciple making. I'm as excited about that one. Okay, so how, Kenneth, when you think about revitalization and equipping people for evangelism, now Matt Queen gave an answer the other day to it was very, I thought it was provocative, actually. I thought it was very good. I don't know if I'm fully on it, but he basically said when Paul said to Timothy, do the work of an evangelist, that Timothy had the gift of evangelism as stated in Ephesians 4:11. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I realized, and this is controversial here, is I went, okay, if Ephesians 4:11, the gift of evangelism is this, it's the equipping gift. It says in verse 12, for the equipping, the evangelist, it's for the equipping that I go, I don't know that that's just the evangelizing of a community by an evangelist. And I'm not against that. Let's bring in Greg Laurie. Amen. But I think we've fallen short on equipping people for evangelism. Now, what are you thinking right there? Let me just throw it out to you and say, what are you thinking right now?
Well, let me preface what I'm about to say with my initial comment would be, the reason six and seven are so integral is because they are both the Great Commission, right? And that's why it was good to set this aside and let's talk about that individually. What we're talking about today is the Great Commission, evangelism and disciple making. And so when we look at this equipping for evangelism, you know, for me, I look at a healthy context of evangelism. And the easiest way, the elementary way of saying it is, it's not a one-track equipping method. The more complex way that I usually describe it is, you have to equip people based on their evangelistic style. Everyone has a style of evangelism. Some people are relationship evangelists. Some people are apologetic evangelists. Some people are very confrontational evangelists. You know, Roy Fish, the late Roy Fish, he would talk about, you know, the percentage of people in your church that are willing to go knock on doors, somewhere around 7-9% are willing to go knock on doors. Now, you know, we all know you launch this big canned evangelism program and you get, you know, 90% of the church over the course of 18 months that gets trained and you go out knocking on doors. But realistically, after about 18 months, those numbers just fall apart. And it's because a small percentage of people are willing to go knock on doors. That does not excuse the rest of the congregation for doing evangelism. But unfortunately, many of our pastors, they focus on evangelism as being one track. We go knock on doors. That's our evangelism. And that's such a small percentage of people. You've got to figure out what are people's style of evangelism. You've got people in your church that are willing to host a dinner at their house and invite people from their neighborhood over to do a barbecue or whatever. And they'll talk about Jesus in that environment. So that's a relational evangelism style. You've got some people that they're willing to be what I would call a roving evangelist. Man, if you have an event, vacation Bible school, or better yet, you know, like a fall festival, trunk or treat, you've got some people that don't mind walking around the crowd and talking about Jesus as they walk around in that crowd, but they're not willing to go knock on a door and do it, right? And so you have to find what are people willing to do in evangelism and then equip them to do that methodology. And then the church has to offer those opportunities in order to do that. So, you know, if I've got people willing to walk around and talk about Jesus, but I don't ever have an event that brings masses to the campus or masses out to the park where the church is hosting an event or wherever, then it doesn't help my roving evangelist at all, because, you know, where are they going to walk around and talk about Jesus at a church function? And so it's to me, it's all about finding people's style. And oftentimes style is based on their personality type. And so you understand what their personality is, how God has uniquely created them. And then you lean into that for the purpose of evangelism and help them to do that.
Dr. Fred Luter. I love yeah. Fred Luter. And you know what I like? He remembered my name.
That's awesome.
And I'm a nobody, but he had this thing called frangelism. Did you ever hear that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
He had this friendship evangelism. And I remember back, we used to kind of hate on that a little, and I get it kind of, but not from what he did, because he was saying relationships, and it will come out that part of equipping is as much relating to people and staying connected to them and just relating to them, not as projects, but as people. But to reap the harvest, you have to have the other side, which is some intentionality. So it's relational and intentional, let's say. And then the reproducible part is sharing the gospel, and hopefully they will go and share a witness. Funny, in the New Testament, they weren't equipped as much to do evangelism before they started witnessing. That is just amazing. They just started sharing, then they got equipped. Okay, so when you think about equipping, and how, I mean, I'm big on this, mobilize. I use the word mobilize. How does a pastor mobilize his people for evangelism? I mean, some practical things. And then, Kenneth, if you could talk to people who are not pastors, because we're doing a two-track audience in these podcasts, pastors, but also people who are church members, how can they help in the equipping of people to do evangelism?
Yep. So let's start with the very basics, right? Everyone needs to know how to tell their story, right? You know, we call it an elevator speech. Man, if you can't tell your salvation story, the amount of time it takes you to ride up or down an elevator, you're missing an opportunity to effectively and quickly share a word of truth in somebody's life. And so basically, you know, you have your life before Christ, your introduction to Christ and your life since that introduction. And you should be able to succinctly be able to communicate that. And so number one, the congregation needs to know how to tell their story. So pastors need to train their congregation to tell their story. Now, once I know how to tell my story, the rest of it is just kind of putting the puzzle pieces together. So when you talk about mobilizing to me can be a seasonal thing, right? Depending on what season yes. we're in, we mobilize differently. So I'm going to use some of those high holy days as an example. O.S. Hawkins, retired president, CEO of Guidestone Financial, has written some little books, right? The Easter Code, the Christmas Code. These are short little devotional books. The Christmas Code is about Advent. The Easter Code is basically it's a lentil. It's a 40-day reading through Lent that you use leading up to. You can actually mobilize your congregation with those little books. You put those books in people's hands and just say, man, take these out in the community, distribute them, invite people, tell your story. People are habitual, right? We're creatures of habit. We do our grocery shopping on the same day at the same time, and we usually go through the same checkout line, right? I mean, we get in this habit. So you see that same cashier time and time and time again. The question is, are you engaging that person in a conversation? Are you opening an opportunity so that they get to know you and you get to know them, so that when you have these mobilized opportunities, you could put a book in their hand and say, hey, you know, here's a book about Christmas. Our church is, our pastor is preaching a series on the Advent, and this book is about the Advent, and it's got a daily reading, and you could just read through this book, and you could come join us on Sunday, right? It's an opportunity to extend an invitation for somebody to come to the church. But if you're not mobilizing your congregation to engage with the community in different ways, they're probably not going to be inviting those people to come to church on special event opportunities. So part of our mobilization is figuring out what are we mobilizing our congregation for right now. So, you know, it's the end of the school year for a lot of people. Your church might be doing some sort of end of school year bash for the kids. Well, that's a great opportunity to invite, you know, you walking through the cash register. Hey, do you have kids? Our church is doing this event, you know. And as you're doing this, as you're offering these opportunities, you get opportunities to give that elevator speech on occasion, right? You know, do you have a place to worship? You don't? Well, I used to not worship either. And then, you know, this happened in my life. I accepted Jesus, and here's the place I worship now, and I'd love to tell you more about it. Here's a little book you can read. You know, anything like that that generates a conversation that gets the people comfortable where they are. Again, everybody has a style. Some people are willing to sit down at the coffee shop and talk to the person next to them and really engage in an in-depth conversation and transition that into a gospel conversation, which is great. Some people are not comfortable with interrupting the person next to them. But if you're at that coffee shop on a regular basis and you see that same person and y'all have this, you know, habit of nodding to each other, smiling, saying good morning or whatever, you might get to a point where you would slide them a booklet and say, hey, our church has got this special thing going on. We'd love for you to come. Here's something you can read to get you prepped on what our pastors do. So these are the types of things we've got to look for. So pastors have to equip the congregation to tell their story. Congregations need to know their story. It's unfortunate. Debbie and I were working with one church recently, and we would just kind of sit down and ask people to share their story. And they really had a hard time communicating their story of salvation. And it wasn't just one or two people. This was a right. mass problem. I actually had Dr. Queen do a Zoom training conference for the church and invited people to participate. And I told him, I said, look, I want you to do evangelism training, but one of the things I want you to cover is how do you tell your story of salvation? Because I believe that the people we met with had a salvation story, right? There was fruit bearing, the conversations we're having, it was that. But they didn't know how to tell their story. And that's the fault of us pastors. We're not doing our job to help the congregation tell their story.
Okay, so I love that. A couple of things. So if you're a pastor and if you are a lay leader or church member, whatever you're a disciple of Jesus in a local church, and you're going, how do I jump in? Okay, now let me speak to the pastor first. Pastor, I think once a year, a pastor needs to be equipping, at the very least, once a year, preferably every 6 months, equipping people to share their testimony, insert gospel passages in the middle of that. I use Ephesians 2, 8, and 9, 1 Corinthians 15, 3, and 4, and Mark 1, 15, and to share your story. Actually, I'm developing something called Your Story, and I'm going to make up some cards. These are Mission 316 cards, these little cards. I can't get it focused on this camera, but Mission 316 is so stoked up. They're great, and you can, they have little Scantron QR codes on them, and I'm going to record my testimony, put it on YouTube. And I'm also going to design a file that makes it available for people to go and get this file that shows you how to go and write your story, outline it, write it, practice it, record it with a phone. We can do that now. And then load it onto, if you have a Gmail account, you've got a YouTube account. You just got to go in there and open it. And then it's free. It doesn't cost a thing. And then you actually could go to Vistaprint and get your own cards. And when you go out to eat, you leave this and you actually do it all that Kenneth just said a minute ago. And then you're able to send them to your story. Now, here's the thing. Story works. If you go and say, tell me your name, what's your life story, as much as you want to tell, and where are you on your journey with God? If you ever had an hour just to listen to someone, just to listen, they will tell you their story they want to tell. And we listen to their story, share ours to tell his story, the whole wordplay there. I can tell you it works. Now, I'm not against all of the kits. I'm not against all those kits. Like I had a friend of mine the other day, I'll leave his name out, but just in case he's listening, I'm not against it. But I said, what are you gonna do with evangelism? I want to revitalize this program and this and that. And it was a programmatic canned approach of the past. And I thought, oh my gosh, I just don't think that's going to work. It's not the culture we live in anymore. It does work. I don't think it's going to work in mass. And the people in the pew, it's obvious. They're not sharing. And all of our training, so it's easier for them to share their story than it is to memorize stuff. Matt Queen said he has a thing called evangelizing without memorizing. I like that. I want to hear more about that.
Yeah.
Now, pastor, the other thing pastors have to do is what Kenneth did is you have to have resources to mobilize your people into events or church. So I'm big on invite cards. I think you ought to be inviting people to church. I know that's not evangelism, but it is good pre-evangelism. And I'm convinced if a person's not inviting people to church, they're not going to share the gospel. There'll be a few, but not in mass. Much more people will take that card. They'll leave it where they go. They'll go to their server. Kenneth, I saw you do this in Fort Worth. You jumped right on it to that little sweet Hispanic lady at that restaurant. You said, you put me on the spot. You said, hey, he's a pastor. He's going to pray in a minute. And you just loved on her. It was natural just to say, hey, we're going to pray. And is there anything we can pray for you about? So pastor, and if you're a church member, I'm just going to say this. You should not be in a church that does not do evangelism equipping. I'm not telling you to leave your church. I'm saying get in and get trained up and motivate your pastor and partner with them to do this. The way I do it is I put two chairs on a stage and I just let them practice their story. The reason why I asked this, Kenneth, is because I think evangelism equipping has fallen on some bad times on the altar of church growth.
Yeah, it really has. And it's unfortunate. And I think it just gets lost, right? It gets lost in the mix. And especially when we're talking about revitalization, it becomes one other thing that the pastor has to figure out when he's going to have time to do it. And if he goes back again to focusing on the story, everybody's individual story, it makes evangelism training just a natural part of what's happening.
Yeah, it's not complicated to tell your own story. You don't have to buy a kit. You don't have to do barely anything. Right. You can put easy stuff around it. I find churches are not resourcing well, and so people are not equipped.
That's right.
And when they're not equipped, they're not going to share. They're not going to share because they're scared. They're fearful because they're not confident.
Right.
And Well, that, honestly, that is such a real thing for me right now.
Yeah, and this is why, you know, I mentioned at the beginning why it's so important that these two are connected together. There's also a reality that if the church is not effectively making disciples, people are not going to share either. And so, you know, just from the consultant side, when we do a church health analysis on a church, when we find a church that doesn't know what their disciple-making strategy is, it's also a church that is not evangelizing. The two go hand in hand. And so if we can take care of both of these simultaneously and quit separating the Great Commission, but bring it together, then what we see happening is we have a plan for what to do when we reach somebody. Therefore, people are more willing to reach someone.
I will put in the show notes how to prepare your testimony. I've got that written out already. I've always got it for anyone who asks. You can outline your story, and it's something that I believe every Christian needs to have thought through. You don't have to think it through to share your story. You've got a witness if you're a Christian, but it will be better if you think it through. You will get such an appreciation for the gospel. You will draw confidence in your ability to share the story, to listen to people and say, oh, you've got that problem too? You know what? I've had that problem before in my life. And now you start talking about your life before Christ and it moves in. I've done some things on TikTok with that piece by piece. If you're a listener and you're just listening, I like equipping people to share their story and to learn how to share, how to help someone pray the sinner's prayer. I pray a sinner's prayer with people, but I ask them to make a decision before I have them pray that prayer. And that's stuff that gets thought through. No pilot just wings the landing. If you're winging the landing, you're not in a good place. You got to think that stuff through. And
that's right.
Yeah. I feel like we're missing, we're not getting it all out for equipping for evangelism. What do you think of my comment, Kenneth, that pastors need to equip once a year at least, preferably two times a year, for 4 to 6 weeks on how to share the gospel?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that, again, if you're not planning for it, it's not going to happen. And so, and again, this kind of gets into that whole pastors get overwhelmed and inundated with so many things going on. You know, and you do this, you know, you've got to step back and plan your year out, right? Where am I going with my preaching, but also where am I going with my training? And when's the right time to train and to equip? And so you mentioned that at least one time, but probably two times, 4 to 6 weeks, equipping people how to share their story. I think it can be done in about 4 weeks effectively. You could do some one-day seminars, just kind of take a half day and sit down and go through it. But I think that the ideal time for us to do that is when we're approaching these opportunities to engage with mobilizing the congregation, right? So we have our ongoing ministries of the church. That's all well and good. But when you see a unique opportunity coming up to mobilize your congregation for evangelism, before that happens, you should train them to share their stories. Hey, anybody that has not attended a share your story session needs to show up, because we're getting ready to move into Fall Festival. And so in September, you should be training, because when October rolls around and Fall Festival is there, you've got to be able to be mobilized and deployed. If you're not trained, you're not going to mobilize. You're a military guy. You're in the Army. You're a mortarman, right? You trained and you trained and you trained on how to call those numbers to make sure the mortar fire was going where you wanted it to go. You trained in high winds, you trained in rain, you were prepared so that when you were deployed, you knew how to respond, how to adjust, what to happen. The same thing is true in the church. We have to train for evangelism so that when we are deployed for evangelism, we know what to do.
Pastor, or maybe you're listening, you're a church member, maybe right now you need to write down on a piece of paper or a napkin or something and say, just write the word evangelism and go make an appointment with your pastor. Or pastor, maybe you need to set a date and go, okay, I've got to set a date for this training. That would be the shoe leather takeaway, the stoke it up in evangelism. It happens by setting a date Another thing that Dennis Nunn says do is do it on Sunday morning. Do a one morning thing where you teach how to share your story on a Sunday morning. Maybe you do that and you teach it. And then the next Sunday you say, now we're going to take about 20 minutes of the service to have about five people do a 3-minute testimony in the service. It's going to be rapid fire. And then it's on Sunday morning and it's spreading. People get excited when they see that and they see, oh, that's not that difficult. Now, one thing that'll happen is if you will train your people how to share their story, once they get equipped and trained, you're going to have decision counselors for any kind of event that you have. And so the reason why we don't have decision counselors is because we can't get people who will train up for it and do it right. So pastors like we do the personal evangelism ourselves. And then what is the follow-up? So I want to move to question number 7, which is equipping for New Testament disciple making in the church. Once someone is saved and baptized, I've done an informal poll around. I've done it with a lot of people in the room and just a few people or just one person. And I will ask this question. I'll say, how many of you were, after you were born again, you crossed the line of faith and you were baptized and you started connecting to a local church, how many of you were discipled one-on-one or one-on-three? It can't be more than one-on-three. Peter, James, and John. One-on-one or one-on-three, how many of you were discipled? Only 1 in 10 will say they were. Now, the number sometimes will be 4 or 5. Maybe you might get fortunate and there's 6 people. That number is still terrible. And it's because we are so busy. What I've found in the last 8 years is we are so busy trying to do church growth that we're not making disciples at the ultimate level of one-on-one. So what would you say to a pastor and people in the church, Kenneth, about discipling newer, younger believers? And the reason why I say that like that is because I think the way you disciple newer, younger believers is going to represent in a large part how you make disciples overall.
Yeah. Well, it needs to happen, right? It is a shortcoming and it has been a shortcoming for the church for generations, right? For decades, we've had this problem of the failure to truly disciple. And it actually, Alan, it plays out in more than just the new believer, right? We see this happening in other spiritual milestones. Someone gets called into ministry. That's part of my testimony. It's called into ministry. Nobody discipled me on what that calling was. I didn't know what to do with it. I floundered around for several years trying to figure it out on my own because the church didn't have a discipling ministry. So when someone gets saved and baptized, you know, partly you got to employ the old Billy Graham method, right? So you got saved at a Billy Graham crusade. They always had a little 2-week or 4-week devotional that they would put in your hand that day. Now, where I would kind of diverge a little bit from their model, they were like, hey, jump into the Gospel of John and start reading. For a new believer, even for a maturing believer, I'll just tell you right now, John 1:1 is confusing, right? So you're telling this guy that just accepted Christ, I want you to jump into John 1, and he reads, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. What? This doesn't matter. I mean, so we need to do a little better than, and I get it, you know, you want to get people in the Word of God.
Yes.
Matthew has a chapter of genealogies. Well, that's scary. And it's so they find what they can and get them in it. But I think it's better for these books that you put in their hand and say, look, start reading this. And it has a little fill in the blank or something until we can schedule a meeting. Somebody's going to follow up with you. We're going to get together. You know, Lifeway has relaunched their survival kit. Lifeway Christian Resources did. They kind of reintroduced and relaunched that Ralph Neighbor had put together. So those little tools are great tools to get someone started while you get them partnered up with someone. You know, the call to joy, call to growth material, all of those are great little tools to put in somebody's hand. But until you get them engaged in a conversation with a discipler, the book is not enough. There's got to be a conversation that walks with them through this journey. And unfortunately, this is what's missing in churches all across the nation and has for quite some time. I mean, I did not benefit from that when I was saved, right? Now, when I got into the youth ministry, we had a youth minister that used Survival Kit, and then he used Master Life, and that was a part of his discipling, but we did it in mass, right? You had 50 or 60 students in the room going through a book, and there's not conversation happening. There's not, and so you get a little bit of discipling because you're getting God's word and you're hearing the truth, but it's not true disciple making because you're not in a dialogue and a conversation with a more mature believer. And so this is lost. And we've got plenty of, you talk about doing it for new believers, but we've got plenty of established believers. We have people listening to this podcast right now that we have pastors listening to this podcast that have never been discipled. They don't know what it looks like. And that's why they struggle with how we're going to implement it in the life of the church.
When I became a Christian and got baptized and started following the Lord and all this stuff, the beginning, I didn't get discipled one-on-one. I went to Sunday school. Thankful for that, by the way. I started going to church. Thankful for that. I grew. I did grow, but no one ever took me aside and said, hey, you're going to be meeting me in El Paso at the Village Inn, and I'm going to be pouring into you for about 6 months. That just didn't happen. And I can tell you, I would have had accelerated growth if someone would have discipled me one-on-one the way you're saying. What I've found in the last 8 years is that 7 to 8 years, is that one-on-one produces more fruit in the long run. Or maybe another way to say it is it produces a fruit that has not yet been produced because we're trying to grow a garden instead of working with one plant. Like, and you know, Tim Ebers, the poster boy for me for this. This guy right now, he was a meth addict, drugs, alcohol, partying. He was all off the range. Got saved, got baptized, started going to church. I discipled him in that first year. I discipled him for 1 year. Now, we didn't meet every day, but we met most Thursdays at a coffee shop in Ruidoso. And now, 7 years later, for the last few years, he has been turning the content that I gave him into other people. Right now, he's working with two other people. And here's where the conversation gets killed with pastors. Is I'll say, well, disciple making. They'll go, oh, yeah, we do that. Okay, let's see. So it's relating, it's intentional, and it's reproducible. So we go relationship. Oh, yeah, yeah, man, we're relating to people. Yes. Okay. And I go, yeah, you're getting an A+ on that. You're right. Intentional content. What content do you use? Do you have intentional content for newer, younger believers? I have an intentional, I'll put this in the show notes. I have intentional content. It's very intentional. It's not based on any book. I basically use Campus Crusade for Christ stuff. But then here's where the conversation ends with pastors. When I say, okay, now is your model, is what you do reproducible? Do you have a downline of disciples who are making disciples? And the answer, the conversation's over. There is no downline. It's always something else. Now, listen, if you're listening and you're going, man, that was harsh. Well, it is harsh. I had to realize that for most of the time, Kenneth knows this, we're small groups guys. And I'm all about small groups. Get in a group of 12, you'll grow. You will grow in your, as a disciple. If you're not in a group of 12 of some kind, you're going to be slowing your growth down for the most part. I challenge every pastor to be able to disciple someone else in the church. And expect that person will become a disciple maker. Now, this is just the beginning of this conversation. This is such a whole loud, long conversation that has to happen. Robbie Gallaty has really tapped into this. You follow any of his stuff?
Yeah, I do. And I'll say, you know, there are these guys out there that are tapping into it. And I will be a little critical of some of it because they are critical of the university model, right? And they say you can't do university model disciple making, but the reality is you should be doing university model disciple making because not everyone is going to go into the small group. I mean, they're not going to go to the one-on-one. So you have to have on-ramps. And so I think of it as a funnel, right? So we get people in worship, and then we get them in Sunday school, small group ministry. Then we get them into some sort of university model of disciple making. And then we can move them into this one-on-one, one-on-three. Now, there is a reality if you create the right model that you get someone saved, you immediately get them in this over here, the one-on-one, 103. But then you're missing everything in the middle, and they miss out on relationships. And relationships are so key to the community of the church. In fact, research shows that if someone doesn't connect with a minimum of five people within 6 months, they're going to fall away from the church. And so it doesn't matter that they've got this one-on-one going. If they haven't found a community to connect in to give them more relationships. And so if you create a funnel where you're saying, here are all of these opportunities for you to connect. Well, each of those groups, you connect with one or two people, you end up with five or six or seven connections within 6 months. So you're more likely to stick in this community of faith, so that when the hardships come, and that's the, you know, when hardships come in people's life, they either grow closer to God or they turn away from God. And so if they have relational connections to community, they can lean into that, which allows them to grow closer to God. So we can't criticize a model that allows us to funnel other people into these smaller groups. We actually need to support that and fan that flame and say, look, we want you to get comfortable to this point.
Yeah, a friend of mine, John Burton, who used to work for Bill Bright, he calls it movement. He says you got to use the bigger events and connections for the possibility of the smaller disciple-making opportunities. Let us be clear to you, listener, we are not trying to disparage large group stuff, although there is a warning. We are for both. We are for all of it. And somebody will say, when I talk to pastors and leaders and people in the church, they'll say, well, there's many ways to do it. And when I hear that, I'm so tired. I'm ranting, but I'm so tired of hearing that, because I'm going, that is an excuse most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, that's just an excuse for you to say, not have to say this, I'm not doing anything. And I know that sounds rough, but the deal becomes, we would agree, there's many ways to do it. The question becomes, are you discipling anyone? For the previous question, are you providing an equipping opportunity at all for your people? Because if these two questions are not on the docket, I'm going, don't expect your church to change. You can't expect Great Commission results, salvations, baptisms, and disciple making without the going and the equipping and being ready.
Yeah. Now I want to camp on that end for just a moment.
Jump in.
The last word, reproducible, right? And so oftentimes that there are movements that take place where people are trying to jump to the reproducible model without doing the foundational work of giving you something to reproduce, right? The end result is I want as many small groups, one-on-one, one-on-three going as possible. And so I find the quick way to get there, right? And that's not disciple making, right? In fact, I'm preaching through Colossians right now. And in Colossians 2, Paul deals with this issue of the false teachers that he was dealing with at the time. He gives them this, and I wish I could remember exactly which verse. It's somewhere right there between 9 and 14 of Colossians chapter 2. He talks about that these basic principles, the false teachers were essentially affirming these basic principles, these elementary ideas. And what Paul is saying is, without depth, without you studying and getting doctrine and theology, you get led astray with basic principles. You get led astray with human philosophy because it sounds good. It sounds good, but it's not Christ and Christ alone, right? They're not really digging into the need here. And so that's what some churches get guilty of. It's not that they're trying to lead people astray, but they're not giving them depth for disciple making. You know, disciple making, I mean, we've talked about, you know, Romans 12:2 is where it's at. You transform the image of Christ by the renewing of your mind. That means you have to get into the transforming word of God and really study it, so that you're understanding the doctrine that is there, the theology that is there, so that you are looking more like Jesus. And then you can reproduce this in somebody else. Otherwise, you're just reproducing an elementary element that is not beneficial. It's not going to allow somebody to really hold on to their faith.
a story. We, you know, we're running out of time here, but a story. When I learned this disciple making stuff, I learned it from a guy named John Burton, who discipled two New Mexico guys. You know, Dave and Rick Britton. I went up to their church in Albuquerque, and they got on a whiteboard for 3 hours and just schooled me. And I was enamored by it. I was like, oh, wow, this is something else. And not only was it content, but it was philosophy of one-on-one. And I asked this, typical pastor stuff. I said, so how long does it take? 6 to 8 weeks? And they said, it takes a year. And I started laughing. I was like laughing. And I noticed they were not laughing. And I was like, what? What's wrong? And they went, it takes a year. You take one guy and pour your life into him and make sure he gets it and can turn it to some extent. You give him the best opportunity to turn this into someone else's life. It will take a year. And I realize, oh man, I'm still thinking too programmatic. And that goes into what you were saying. This is not a quick fix. You don't want numbers of groups just to say you got them. They got to be effective groups. I'll probably do a teaching on this in the future on a whole thing of how we make disciples. It is one of many ways, but it is a way that we know works for regular guys in construction work who aren't going to read books per se. They don't have time, or somebody who's a lawyer is just pounded with material and content all week long. What we do helps them not have to do that. They just use their Bible, but it's very, very important that we actually make disciples with whoever opportunity to make disciples.
That's right. Absolutely right. Man, I can't believe these two questions went longer than the five questions.
Yeah. Yeah. These were the two big questions that I believe are important. Churches have to equip for evangelism, and we must equip for New Testament disciple making. We will do more to kindle afresh the gift of God in all of you. Thank you, Dr. Kenneth Priest, my brother, my friend, and enjoy praying for you and Debbie as you guys are in Hawaii. And to you, our listeners, we love you. Thanks for tuning in. Share this anywhere you can to stoke up your pastor and other leaders and Christians around you. Kenneth, any final comments?
And that's all for me today. Thanks for the invitation. Enjoy being with you, and I'll look forward to other opportunities.
Oh, yeah, we got to come back. We got to do a thing on summer-based small groups. But for now, stoke it up. We'll see you guys later. I hope you enjoyed the two-part interview, especially today on evangelism and disciple making with Kenneth Priest. And I hope that you will leave a review of our podcast. It allows us to get the word out. People search for things like this and it helps us. It just stokes it up. And so I want to encourage you to do that. Also, if you have not received a Stoke It Up t-shirt and you would like to get one, if you will reach out to me in social media, I can tell you what the details are there. But we would love to give you one of our black Stoke It Up shirts to kindle afresh the gift of God in you and then through you to other people. We'll see you on the next episode.